We're doing the Rambam's introduction to Sefer HaMitzvot with the Ramban's commentary. We're up to the Ramban's commentary, I guess. He's been defending and attacking, and he's in the middle of a long discussion about different laws of derivation. And we're on page Chaf Beis Chaf Beis Amud Aleph in the Vilna, the standard editions, page Samach, the left-hand column in the Frankel editions. Ve'eve yodei, and I want you to know, says the Ramban, shezeh shamu chachmin shein adam dan, gzira shava me'atzmo. That which we all know, Chazal tell us, you can't invent your own gzira shava. En kavanatam lomar shekol gzira shava mevoet le'misinai. They do not mean to say that they have a clear tradition on every gzira shava going back to Sinai. That's what I think it would mean, but no, that's not what it means. Benimser lehem mipi Moshe Rabbeinu, tilmedu mila plonit shebepasuk ploni, mila plonit shebepasuk ploni. They did not have an exact tradition that said, now I want you to apply this word from this pasuk to this word and that pasuk, v'tashvu din shneim ninyan ploni, and then equate their halachas with regards to the following halacha. En hadavar kin. That's not the way it works, says the Ramban. And if you learn a little bit of Talmud, you see it has to be that way. Because the Gemara discusses Zer Shava this way and that. The Gemara leaves Zer Shava. Yeah, you have in the beginning of Yuma a whole discussion about how do you judge when do you need to prepare Kohen Gadol for 7 days. So you have, it says they prepared the Kohanim 7 days before they started doing service. Vayi Yom HaShmini, on the 8th day, and Rosh Chodesh Nisan, they inaugurated the Mishkan, they started service, but they had 7 days where they left their homes and they were preparing for that service. So, Kasher Asa B'Yom Hazeh, Tziva Hashem La'asot L'chaper Alechem. Hashem says, and just like you guys did today, I command, Moshe says, Hashem commanded you to do to atone for yourself. So the Gemara says, okay, Tziva Hashem, the word Tziva is indicative, Hashem commanded you somewhere else. Where? Then the Gemara starts discussing. Maybe it's this carbon, maybe it's that carbon, maybe it's their golem, maybe it's the carbonus of every day. The Gemara goes through fantastic numbers of options, a whole daft worth of options. Where do we learn this Gzeira Shava to? And the Gemara wasn't always sure which words you learn Gzeira Shava from. Sometimes it was concepts, sometimes it was words, but it wasn't clear to where. So what the Ramban is saying here at first glance sounds fantastic, but when you look up close, there's no other way to learn the Gemara. You have plenty of Gemaras that are indicative of this concept. There's also Tosfos, which we might discuss if the Ramban doesn't spell it out as we continue.
Do you know anyone who disagrees with
me? No. I don't see how you could disagree with him.
I don't know. He always disagrees.
Okay.
I thought he was somebody doing implicitly credit.
Not yet. Right now, this is separate from the Ramban. Right now, the Ramban is informing us. We'll see where he's headed. You find them arguing in many places about Gzeira Shava. Like the Talmud over there discusses in Tractate Chulin. What's the logic behind Rabbi Meir's reasoning with regard to the mitzvah that you may not slaughter an animal and its son on the same day? Gamar shchita, shchita, mishchutei chutz. He has Gzeira Shava. The word shchita, otovet beno, lo tishchatu biyom echad. You may not slaughter them in one day. So that's the word shchita over there. And it says regarding the commandment not to slaughter animals outside the Beit HaMikdash, it also uses the word shchita, same root. Malalan shchita sheina ruya shma shchita. Just like over there, if you do slaughtering that really ultimately is not fit, it's still defined as slaughtering the animal, doing it outside the Beit HaMikdash, and one is in transgression of this commandment. Afkan shchita sheina ruya shma shchita. Over here too, with otovet beno, even if the way he slaughtered was not really fit, it still constitutes otovet beno. It falls under that same prohibition. Rabbi Shimon, my time, and what's the reasoning behind Rabbi Shimon's opinion? Gamar min utvoach tevach ve'achin. Because it says the terms utvoach tevach ve'achin, ma la'alan shchita reuya, afkan shchita reuya. So over there it's discussing preparing food to be eaten, so it's talking about shchita that's consumable. The Ikshu, so the Gemara asks, Rabbi Meir Ligmer min Utvach Tevach Ve'achin, why doesn't Rabbi Meir learn from the same derivation as Rabbi Shimon? The Gemara answers, Danin Shchita Mishchita Ve'in Danin Shchita Mitzvicha. Rabbi Shimon learns from the word Shchita to the word Tivicha. He says, Gzer Shava. Now that's doable. Sometimes we say similar concepts can also be Gzer Shava. Rabbi Meir says, if I have an identical word, I prefer to do Gzer Shava from an identical word than to do it from a word that's not identical, just a similar concept. V'shalu lomar she'av zo gzera shavai amru mai nafkemina v'atan deber b'yishmel v'shava kwenu v'akwen zo yishiva zo yibiya. We have a gzera shava. The Gemara always calls on this gzera shava that the Brisa says. It says in one place, v'shava kwen, the coin will return. I think it's talking over there about a tsaras in a building. And then it says, v'akwen, so the coin will come. One time it's talking about his coming, one time it's talking about his going out. And we do gzera shava from v'shava kwen v'akwen. It's not the same word. So the Brisa says, yeah, but it's talking about the same thing. So that you could do gzera shava that way. So over here too, why don't you just do gzera shava from shchita to tevicha? It's a similar concept. The Gemara answers what it answers throughout the Shas. Yeah, if I have no choice, if I have gzera shava and I don't have the identical word, then I do the gzera shava with a word that's not identical, but a similar concept. But when I have the identical word, then my derivation stems from the identical word. Then the Gemara reverses the question. Well then, why doesn't Rabbi Shimon learn like Rabbi Meir? Why doesn't he learn from the word v'shachat that's describing shchita that's outside the Beis Hamikdash, slaughtering an animal outside the temple? Over there it's talking about a kosher slaughtering. So Rabbi Shimon should also learn that otovet beno, the prohibition of slaughtering an animal and its child, is only if you did a correct slaughtering. Rabbi Shimon says, well, I have to derive to a mitzvah that's about chulin. Meaning, the Torah says, when you slaughter an animal not in the temple, well, you can't slaughter its son on the same day. So now I have to derive to that mitzvah. Where do I choose to derive from? Rabbi Meir says, well, I'll derive from another parsha that uses the same word, v'shachat. That's the parsha that describes slaughtering animals of the temple outside the temple. Rabbi Shimon says no, because you're talking about chulin. If you have to derive a halacha for chulin, I would much rather derive it from other concepts of chulin than from a din in the Beis Hamikdash that even though it has the same word, v'shachat. V'ilu haita l'Rabbi Meir kabbalah m'sinai d'shchita sh'inahu yashma shchita. If Rabbi Meir had a concrete tradition, this is the halacha, and this is how you derive it. If he had a tradition going back to Sinai that way, and Rabbi Shimon had the exact opposite tradition. Rabbi Meir had a tradition going back to Sinai that the prohibition of slaughtering an animal and its son is even if it's not a good slaughtering. And Rabbi Shimon had the opposite tradition, saying that, no, the prohibition encompasses even a case where you didn't slaughter the animal correctly. She'en shma shchita v'shu lomed min utvach tevach v'achen, and that you derive it from those words. V'haya mekom l'sheilot halalu v'letshuvot shamu b'gmacha. If the tradition were so clear, then what's the Gemara asking? Why don't you derive it from somewhere else? The Gemara should have answered, because his tradition was to derive it here. You see that the tradition was not clear in that. They did not have an exact tradition as to which words to derive from. And that's what the Ramban says. You have multiple examples throughout the Talmud of this concept. It's very clear. That's why I said I don't believe anyone could argue on this, because you see throughout the Talmud that the Talmud does not approach Gezer Shava as something that was so clear all the way back to Sinai. What was it is a good question. Let's wait and see.
Wasn't the very definition of Gezer Shava understood? When you're saying that when you have similar concepts, such as Shavva, here they're supposed to be opposite concepts. Shavva is something that is very similar. I thought that was the whole idea.
No. But so let's wait. He's going to explain it. Let's wait. We're just starting. He's first slaughtering some holy cows. Then he's going to explain. וכן יש קושיות הרבה בתלמוד וכיוצא בהן שאומרים מנהל גזירה שווה ממקום פלוני. You find often in the Talmud says, why don't you derive a gzera shava from this place? ומתרץ. And then the Talmud answers, מסתברא מאחא ילפינא, and it makes more sense to derive from here, דדמי לה בכך וכך, because it's similar in this respect. ולא מהתם, and I won't derive it from there because it lacks that similarity. וחוזרין ומקשין, and then the Talmud refutes that and comes back and asks, אדרבא מהתם אבלי למדף, no. Maybe it's more similar to what we're suggesting because, and the Talmud goes on and on, working its way back and forth, what's logical? Where should I derive it from? Umasik hanach nefishan. And then the Talmud says, yeah, but this is more similar. You're right. I had two options for argument's sake. One of them has three similarities, the other one has four similarities. Okay, so I derive it from there because there's four similarities. Eilehu geluba Talmud. You find these throughout Talmud. And I don't have to enumerate them because they're all over Talmud. What am I going to list? Start listing every three pages in the Talmud? You literally have it almost every 3 to 5 pages in Talmud. You have a discussion along these lines. Okay, now he's bringing another concept. When it comes to Gzera Shava, we have a Gzera Shava that's Mufne. What does Mufne mean? Mufne means it's been turned in this direction. Meaning, if I have a pasuk and I have a word that seems superfluous in the pasuk, and then I need that word for gzera shava, and then I go to the other pasuk that I want to derive from, and over there too that word seems superfluous, that's called the gzera shava. I'm going to learn from one word to the other. That's mufne, that the words are superfluous, mishnei tzadim on both sides. Both words are superfluous. Sometimes you have a gzer shava that's mufne, mishnei tzadim. Both words that are in the derivation are extra, aside from this derivation. Sometimes you have mufne mitzad echad, that one of them is seemingly extra. And sometimes you have a na mufne, that neither word is extra. Really, both words are necessary for the simple interpretation of the pasuk. But I also want to learn Gzera Shava from them. So the Gemara discusses this. The Machlokes, when can you refute Gzera Shava and when can't you refute Gzera Shava? So the Gemara says as follows. V'odam hu b'gzera shava. Furthermore, the Talmud says about Gzera Shava. Kol Gzera Shava she'ina mufna kol ikar. Eni Gzera Shava. That neither word is extra. En l'medine mena. Then you do not learn from such Gzera Shava. Interesting. I would say it's not a gzera shava. The Gemara doesn't say that. The Gemara says you don't learn from such a gzera shava. Mufna mitzad echad. If only one side is seemingly extra, what we would call turned in the direction of making a limud, limedine mena umshivin. Then you could derive from such a gzera shava, but you could also refute such a gzera shava. Umufne mishneitz tadin limedin men meshivin. But if both words on both sides of the gzera shava are superfluous, then you derive such a gzera shava, and you cannot refute it. Moshamu b'shlishim inidav v'mkumot achrim, as the Talmud says all over. Nida, Yuman, Chagiga, Yevamas, Ksubis, Nazir, all over. V'hem achzirim le'afnuye yotam b'yiturim u'midrashim in asvara. And you see, the Talmud spends a lot of time trying to make the gzera shava extra, to make it mufne. Using drushes and using svaras and using other yiturim in the psukim, v'nechlakin bekach kefidat hachamim, and you have arguments throughout in accordance with chacham's opinion. Aval hakavana begzera shava shi misinai. So what does it mean? Yosef's been asking. So what does it mean when we say gzera shava has to be from Sinai? Lomar shehi biyadam kabbalah. That means they have a tradition. Shedin shchita sheina ruya nilman migzera shava de shchita shchita. Their tradition was the halacha regarding this topic is derived from migzera shava of shchita. Vayta svarato shel Rabbi Meir shanachon nilmod otam mishchutei chutz. Rabbi Meir's logic was okay. So then, if I had to do migzera shava, I would do it from shchutei chutz. Ve'yesh ma shchita, and then I call it shchita. Just if it falls under the same criterion, if it falls, if it follows the same criterion as shchut echutz, the prohibition of slaughtering holy animals outside the temple, then I would call it otovet bino. רבי שמעון ראה בדעתו שיותר נכון ללמוד אותה מן וטבוח טבח ואכן, and רבי שמעון saw it more logical to derive it from the verse וטבוח טבח ואכן, ולא תהיה שחיטה שאינה ראויה נידונת כשחיטה. And then if you derive it from וטבוח טבח ואכן, so then that's only something that's going to be edible. The pasuk's talking about preparing something they're going to eat. So then a shechita that's not fit is not falling under the prohibition of atovet bino. V'chen kulam. Little old me has sources that are pose questions to the Ramban, but let's just finish. He has one more sentence. V'omar b'shema ki ze michlal ma shenishtakach be'evlo shel Moshe b'gzirot shavot. And he says, and I want to suggest that maybe this is included in what was forgotten in the morning of Moshe. It says we lost 3,000 halachos. Maybe this is part of what it was. That maybe what they forgot included this, exactly what is derived from Gezeirah Shavah. There are places in Talmud.
Is that his suggestion?
He's suggesting. He says, I want to suggest maybe. There are places where the Talmud seems to say they had a tradition to learn a word, but they didn't have a tradition regarding which halachas they apply that word, meaning it could go in every direction. The Ramban is making it a pretty clear tradition. Regarding this halacha, I apply this word. Tosfos writes explicitly, and it seems pretty clear, I mean, to me, little me, that you have Gemaras where the Gemara didn't know what to do with the Gezeirah Shavah. The Gemara held it open. You didn't always use Gezeirah Shavah for the same halacha. Sometimes you use Gezeirah Shavah for a completely different halacha. So now what are you going to say? So there's a lot to discuss. I have like 10 to 15 cards of notes on Gezeirah Shavah. Yeah, okay. Say there, but now we saw what the Ramban said. V'ani chozer od litzavot al divrei harav. Litzvoach, I'm sorry.
You know the method of Gezeirah Shavah without knowing its halakhic implication.
Right, right. Meaning Chazal seem to know that there's a word here I need to use as a derivation. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to get with that word. Like the example we gave in the beginning. Letzavot. Letzavot. It says, Kasher Asaba Tziva. It says, Kasher Asaba Yom Hazeh, Tziva Hashem La'asot. Hashem commanded, just like you separate the coin here, you should also separate him elsewhere. Where? So the Gemara is willing to entertain many options. Everything from the Avodah of each day, to the Shal Shagalim, to Rosh Hashanah, to Yom Kippur, everything. You see, they didn't have it like the Ramban is saying. They knew which word they were supposed to learn Gezeirah Shavah from, but they didn't know what where to apply it.
This is an example when it's a very general kind of concept of Gezeirah Shavah. There's no, doesn't deal with something specific.
Well, it's always written regarding a certain halacha, so it's somewhere.
Is he going to elaborate on what he said before, that we don't learn from
No. It's a Gemara. When we learn the Gemara, we have to discuss it.
But that doesn't
That's
mean
not his invention. He was just quoting.
Does that mean that we, just so I understand a little more, does that mean that we don't learn from those types of Gezeirah Shavah, or sometimes we do actually?
Let's wait. V'ani chozer od litzvach al divrei harav. You have to understand, your question is good, but the answer is long. I wanted you to notice the question, but I don't have time to go into the answer.
Isn't it a very rare form of Gezeirah Shavah?
The what?
It's not mufne from either side.
That's right. That most Gezeirah Shavah.
Right.
The pasuk makes perfect sense with the word Gezeirah
Shavah. No, I'm sure.
He's saying the opposite.
No. But most of the time it's an extra word?
I don't know enough to answer that. I don't know. ואני חוזר עוד לצבוח על דברי הרב שכמה דברים בגמרא למדו אותם במידות אלו שהתורה נדרשת בהם וכמתם בכולם שהם תורה שלמה. And I want to come back and yell over what the rabbi said, what Maimonides said, because there are quite a few things that Chazal say in the Talmud that were derived from the laws of derivation, and Chazal mean that they are biblical. The Rambam said that things that are derived from the 13 laws of derivation are not biblical, and Nachmanides says, yeah, I'll show you quite a few examples where they are. And the rabbi, meaning Maimonides, he enumerates in his count of mitzvahs, mitzvah 287, lav beidut avot al banim. He enumerates the prohibition of fathers testifying against their children to get the death penalty. And that, the Gemara tells us in the third chapter of Sanhedrin, is derived from a ribui. It says, lo yumtu banim al avot, lo yumtu avot al banim, u banim. So that's a ribui. And sons, so we derive from that, that the father too can testify on the son. V'chein banim la'adadi pasul shelen min ha'Torah. And also the fact that we won't accept two brothers, meaning two sons, testimony one about the other, that's also biblical. V'ribu utam imah she'amru, im ken lechtov achman Elohim tu avot al ben, my banim, tafidu banim la'adadi. The Gemara over there says that's also a ribui. Why does the pasuk say fathers shouldn't die over their sons in the plural? It should have just said fathers shouldn't die with their son in singular testimony, that the son can't be one of the witnesses. What the pasuk is indicating is that even if they are sons, meaning even if they are brothers, they cannot testify one for the other. So that's how the Talmud derives it there. V'chein banim la'alma psulin, and the Talmud over there derives also that two brothers cannot testify even if it's not pertaining to one another. They are unaccepted, they are not accepted as witnesses because they're relatives. Upsula nechshav guf Torah, and we consider that biblical. So again, we said the Rambam could easily answer that, because the Rambam also said, whenever it's a guf Torah, so it's biblical. V'chol eilu midrashot min haribuyim, im yot pashtei dekra shelo narog avot ba'avon banim uvanim ba'avot avot. And the truth is, all of these derivations really stem from a ribui, because the simple reading of the pasuk is, fathers shouldn't die over their sons' sins, and sons shouldn't die over their father's sins. It's not talking about over through their father or son's testimony. It's talking about the courts. You guys don't punish a father over what his son did, and don't punish a son over what his father did. That's what the pasuk's talking about. Everything else is derivation. It says in Divrei Hayamim that although they executed him, they didn't kill his children. As the Torah says, you don't kill children over their fathers. So that's why, even though he was wicked, they killed him, they didn't kill his kids. So that's what the pasuk's talking about. When a person's sinful, you don't kill his kids over his own sins. So all this derivation that we say, we don't accept relatives as witnesses, we don't accept parents as testimony on kids, and kids on the parents, and brothers as on one another, brothers on anyone else, all of this we consider biblical. Yet all of it is derived from the laws of derivation. So Rambam, you say that what's derived from the laws of derivation is not biblical. Well, you'll agree with me that all of these are biblical, yet they're from the laws of derivation. Over mitzvah shin chaf bet, and in the mitzvah 322, mana lav shein mitat betin docha shabbat. He says the prohibition is that you may not execute on Shabbos. Giving the death penalty does not push off Shabbos. Viba midin ribui, and that's also learned from a ribui, from one of the laws of derivation. What the Talmud says in the fourth chapter of Sanhedrin, Tana moshavot kakashele veikara katuv habara lechalek yatzat velo uzka bagmara beilu shein Torah aval tafsan min astam bishel Torah. The Talmud over there proves that it's really learned from a ribui, and the Gemara doesn't mention over there that this is a body of Torah like the Rambam says would have to. The Rambam says if you're going to consider it a biblical mitzvah, the Talmud has to specify that it's biblical, that it's a body of Torah. It says the Talmud doesn't say that, and yet everyone agrees that that's biblical. The Rambam himself enumerates that as a mitzvah, that you can't give the death penalty on Shabbos. Yeah.
Rabbi, regarding the logic of the ribui for not having family members testify to each other, that logic doesn't seem to hold if you say, well, why, in that case, would be the logic that someone stranger can testify for you? Because surely a stranger can't be killed for what? And you can't be killed for what? A stranger can be killed.
Right, no, the logic is totally different. The logic in which we derive it is, we ask, why is it talking about plural sense? Meaning, it says, "Lo imtu avot al banim." Why does it say avot? Why does it say banim? Avot must be talking about two fathers who are two brothers. Banim must be talking about two sons, which are cousins, the sons of the two fathers. Lo imtu avot. These two fathers can't be given the death penalty al banim through the testimony of the two sons, the two cousins. So that's the first. That's where we start. So two fathers can't be killed with the testimony of two sons. So a son can't testify for his father or his uncle. From here we derive that the level of relation is father, and even one off from the father, father's brother, uncle's no good. Okay, ubanim, it says sons. So sons, meaning the cousins, can't testify for one another either. Okay, so now you got third generation, so to speak. Father's one connection, father's brother's two, father's brother's son, meaning cousin, is three. It's we oversimplified it. The Talmud spends an Amud discussing how exactly do you do this. How do you learn from that pasuk that you disqualify relatives from giving testimony? But no, we were just comparing the two. It's not that one is an outgrowth of the other. You're right. The Ramban was simply stating that the simple reading of the pasuk is that it's about sin. That you don't kill a son over the father's sin or the father over the son's sin. How do we derive that we're talking about relations? That's, you have to understand the derivations in the Gemara there. It's not a logical outcome of the pshat of the pasuk. Umana, and the Rambam also enumerates achilat chatat v'asham chutz laklayim lav. He says that if you eat a chata sacrifice or an asham sacrifice outside of the holy, outside the klayim, that's a biblical prohibition. And the ola sacrifice must be totally consumed if someone eats it inside the temple. Outside the temple, that's also a prohibition. And we say that you may not eat any sacrifice prior to the sprinkling of the blood on the altar. So that too, the Rambam enumerates as a prohibition. And another prohibition he enumerates is eating the bikurim, the first fruits, before they had been brought up to the Azara. And they're all derivations of Rabbi Shimon. The Amar, Rabbi Shimon says, there's an extra pasuk. The pasuk should have just said, you can't eat them. Then the pasuk doesn't do that. The pasuk says, "Lo tuchal le'chol bisharecha." You cannot eat in your own home. Masal digan chatri oshchav yitzarecha v'chuot bekachav tzonecha v'gezcha. The pasuk enumerates all over again all the different things you can't eat outside the temple. Why does the pasuk do that? So Rabbi Shimon says, "Okay, this is to teach me this halacha. That's to teach me that halacha. Each one teaches me another one of these prohibitions." That's what Rabbi Shimon does there. So. Why doesn't the pasuk just say lo tuchal le'ochlam? You just can't eat them. What we were talking about until now. Mehadu mipet bu'ulamali. Why does the pasuk again single them out? You can't eat this or that or the other. Le'chud elav lekol chad v'chad. To tell me each one has their own prohibition. They're not all one prohibition. Rather, each one has their own. So that's a ribui, and so he's saying that's a drasha. So if that's a drasha, how come the Rambam enumerates them each as their own separate lav? Really, there's one lo tuchal. You can't eat in your own home. The pasuk enumerates a whole bunch of things. The Rambam himself says, how do I know that if someone eats from Hegdesh, meaning if you have a korban that's supposed to be for the Kohanim, that's called Me'ilah. If someone takes Hegdesh and derives benefit or eats the Hegdesh, that's called Me'ilah, that action, and he gets lashes, he gets Malkos. The Rambam says, how do I know he gets lashes? I learn it out from one who eats the Ola sacrifice. Well, how do you know one who eats the Ola sacrifice gets it? That's from a drasha. So you see, he holds that drasha is biblical. He says, really, I don't even agree with him on that, because I say it's learned from Truma with the Gzera Shava, the Chet Chet Pesanedrin, Mikol makom ne midrash shemalkin oto. Whether you go my way or his way, gzeir shava or his limud, it's a drasha, and you're giving him lashes. Rambam, you're saying things that are from drashas are not biblical. How are you giving him lashes over it? Umana lav, and another prohibition the Rambam enumerates, be'arel shachal truma bekodshim. If a person is uncircumcised, sometimes you have a person who can't get a circumcision. Or you have a person whose parents didn't circumcise him and he never bothered doing it. So he's a kosher Jew, he's just missing an important mitzvah. So he's prohibited from eating holy foods, truma, kodshim. The Rambam enumerates that as its own prohibition. Ve'ib gzera shava min ha-pesach. And the truth is, how do we know it's prohibited for an RL, a person who's uncircumcised, to eat the holy foods? We derive it from the Pesach. It says by the Pesach you can't eat it, kol arelo yochal bo. And we derive gzera shava from there. Ve'itnatzel bo shumi pi ha-shmua. So the Rambam over there apologizes. He says, we have a tradition. This is biblical. Ve'ani ro'e otam b'gmar yevamot mistafkim b'davar me'od. And I see that in Talmud Yevamos, the Gemara is really questioning this idea. V'shalu shenavi b'gzera shava zu ha'onin. So the Talmud over there asks, well, wait a second, if there's a gzera shava, how do you know who to prohibit eating through the gzera shava? Maybe what you have to say is that this gzera shava teaches me that in owning one who hasn't yet buried his relative who passed away, he may not eat from the holy foods, v'notzi ha'arel. And we should say that a person who's uncircumcised may eat from it. Umitaret, so the Gemara's answer is, mistabra olot avle lerbuye. It makes more sense that that pasuk is including a person who is uncircumcised. Umakshiba adraba, and then the Gemara says, well, maybe their verse is more logical. Umasik hanach nefishin keminagan b'sham komot. So the Gemara starts piling up, making its case. It says, well, this one is more similar in point 1, 2, 3, and this one's more similar in point 1, 2. Ah! So RL is more similar in more points, so that's why we'll learn to RL that RL is prohibited from eating the kachim, truma and kachim. So why didn't they just say, ah, we have a tradition? Maimonides says they have this powerful tradition, so why didn't they say so? They didn't. They were applying logic. They were trying to work out the gzir shava. And so to the prohibition of baking the remnants of menachos. When we bring a karban mincha, so a flour offering, the kohen takes 3 finger worths that are burnt on the altar, and the rest is consumed by the kohanim. The Torah says, the shiare menachos, the remnants that the kohen eats, he may not bake chametz. The Rambam enumerates that as its own prohibition, and he says if one transgresses it, he gets lashes, lemalkot, b'mitzvah kuf chatei. Belamdu to b'gemara, and the Gemara derives this prohibition, midin ribui. The Gemara says we know it from a ribui. So again, it's a derivation. And my man agrees that it's biblical. It says that one who makes it chametz is in transgression for kneading it that way, for setting it that way, for baking it that way. And the fact that someone who eats on Yom Kippur gets lashes, it doesn't say explicitly in the Torah. It doesn't say that. It says in the Torah, Ki chol ha-nefesh ha-shelot te'uneh, the soul that doesn't inflict itself. Doesn't say what? Doesn't say you can't eat in the Torah. We have a derivation that inui means the prohibition of eating. So if someone eats on Yom Kippur, he's going to bring a sacrifice if he did it by mistake. He's going to get lashes if he did it on purpose and there was a warning. Then ilmad b'gmara b'gzera shava, and the Talmud derives it with gzera shava. V'arav manau tomidin kal v'chomer b'mitzat kuf tzadivav. And the Rambam has a very interesting piece on this. In the Mitzvah 196, that I think was just recently uploaded to TorahForMe.org, in Mitzvah 196, so the Rambam discusses, it's a kal v'chomer the Rambam makes of it. So the Ramban over here is arguing on 2 points on the Rambam. You notice in passing he's arguing on other points, other issues he had with the Rambam. V'chen, and another proof, says the Ramban, t'vul yom she'avad, Bilav, we have halacha. Okay. Introduction. You guys probably know all this. A person became tummy. Let's say he had an emission, or a person touched a sheretz, So he goes to mikveh. When he goes to mikveh, he gains one level of purity. But the Torah tells us, Uva Shemesh v'tahil. He has to wait till nightfall until he's completely pure. V'achal yochal min hakodshim. And then he could eat the more holy things. So until nightfall, he is called a Tvul Yom. He's just immersed himself today, and he's waiting for the day to end, and then he'll be completely pure. So a Tvul Yom is prohibited from doing work in the Beis HaMikdash. And the Rambam enumerates that as one of the prohibitions, but it's not written overtly anywhere. It's derived. And so too, a Tvul Yom, one who has gone to mikveh, but nightfall hasn't come, who did service in the temple, the Rambam enumerates it, bilav umita. He says it's a prohibition, and he'll get the death penalty if he does it on purpose. Then no mikra, and yet there's no verse that indicates that. Uvami itura katuv. Beimeino inyan. The whole derivation is a very, very difficult derivation called imeino inyan. You guys familiar with that? Imeino inyan means that sometimes you have a word where you say this word is extra in this topic. So you say, okay, it could teach me this. You say, no, I know that already. It could teach me that. I know that already. Okay, so I got nothing to do with it here. Okay, so if I can't use it to teach me something new here, I'll use it to teach me something new in a totally different area. That's called imeino inyan. If I can't use it for this topic, so then I'm going to use this extra word to teach me something new about something totally different. You understand? You got to really know what you're doing to do such a limud. Huh? The Gemara does that a lot, yeah. So the Ramban says this whole concept that a Tvul Yom who does work in the Beit HaMikdash is transgressing a law. He gets a death penalty. That's not written anywhere. That's just Imeino Inyan. And then the Gemara derives it from Gzira Shava. And Maman is enumerated this too. And with regard to dedicating an animal that has a blemish to the altar, you have many prohibitions. It says, "Bal takdish, bal tishchat, bal tizrok, bal taktir." Kulo bal taktir. Slicha, bal taktir kulo, bal taktir miktzato. The Torah says you're not allowed to designate it. You're not allowed to say this animal I'll bring as a sacrifice when the animal is blind, missing two legs. That's one prohibition. It says you may not slaughter it for the altar. You may not sprinkle its blood. You may not offer all of it. You may not offer part of it. And on each of these, there's the punishment of lashes. But actually, each one is derived from a ribui. As the Talmud explains in the first chapter of Tractate Tmura. And Maimonides also enumerates these. You can't designate, you can't slaughter, you can't sprinkle, you can't offer, can't offer even part of it. You have four different prohibitions in the Rambam, 91, 92, 93, 94. Those are all these prohibitions in the Rambam. V'kvar yatza minyan yoter me'esrim be'odat harav. And I've already enumerated over 20 cases where Maimonides agrees to me that he enumerates things that stem from derivations. And so too, he who eats meat with milk or derives any benefit from it. It says, it doesn't say that. That's all derivations. The punishment is lashes. Doesn't say it anywhere overtly in the Torah. Okay, so the Ramban just gave us a whole slew of proofs. The Ramban continues and says, "Vani tameh mitpale al Rav shu haya lo lilmod meilu al acherot." Says, "I don't understand the Ramban. He should have understood from all these different examples that he's got it wrong in everything. This should have been enough to tell him that." Sharei lo pirshu chachamim beilu lomar shen dvar Torah b'kabbalah, because the Rambam, we said, the Rambam can always answer, well, that's biblical because Chazal had a tradition. It says the Ramban, well, they didn't say that. Yeah, I just gave you over 20 examples. They don't say anywhere this. You should know we have a tradition. This is biblical. They didn't say anything different about these than the others. They just spoke about them the way they spoke about everything else that's derived. Just one second. But we understand on our own from other sources that they've said that they treat them as biblical. So we have to say that all derivations are biblical by them. And we'll answer for the Rambam, no. So you have 20 examples where the fact that you agree that in other instances they treated it as biblical, that's enough to indicate that they said, this is a body of Torah, this they must have had a tradition, it's biblical. The Rambam said there are exceptions, so what did the Rambam do? He said, well, I just showed you 20 exceptions where it doesn't say overtly that they're exceptions, yet Chazal treat them as exceptions. So maybe the Rambam holds, that's enough. So the Rambam will claim, but the Rambam said that they have to tell you. And the question is, did the Rambam literally mean they have to tell you, or is it enough that you see by indication, the same way the Rambam wrote in his letter about Kiddushei Shtar, where the Rambam says, well, you see from other places that Kiddushei Shtar is biblical. So there's room to analyze this. V'inyan kaze b'chol makom mefurash melamed al asatum. And the way we work, says the Ramban, is that if you have a few places that explicitly teach you something, you say, well, they taught me about the other places where it doesn't say it explicitly. So if I just gave you over 20 examples where it's clear that something learned from a law of derivation is biblical, so that proves everything. I don't have to prove everything else. That's the way we work in logic. You prove part of it, you've proven it. Right. Right. I mean,
when you have stuff that you learned explicitly, it means that when it's not so explicitly, but it's like that, then you can also learn it.
Right, but the Ramban's claim is that Chazal don't tell us here explicitly this we had a tradition on, or the Ramban proved they did not have any clear tradition on this, and they didn't overtly say, well, this is biblical, which the Rambam says is the other exception here. But we do see that it is treated as biblical. So the Rambam might say, well, you know, the fact that they treated it elsewhere as biblical, that's equivalent to their saying, either we have a tradition this is biblical, or this is a body of Torah. The Rambam could defend himself, to my mind. You know, obviously the Ramban doesn't agree, but I'm saying it to me doesn't seem so far-fetched.
Says that they have to be consistent. You cannot consist in being explicit everywhere.
Rambam or Ramban? The Ramban is saying, if I've shown you over 20 exceptions to your rule, so then that's it. Then forget your rule.
Is there multiple exceptions? According to the logic.
Well, the Rambam gave a formula. The Rambam also agrees there are exceptions. The Ramban's point is, I've shown you over 20 exceptions that, to the Ramban's mind, do not fit the Rambam's formula for them to be an exception. I'm saying, well, maybe the Rambam says they do. Okay. The Ramban is not finished yet. The Ramban is about to bring another proof. He wants to bring another proof that's like a big proof. So, how do you bring a big proof? You say, well, what's the biggest mitzvah? So what's the biggest mitzvah? It's a tough call, but you, how do you weigh mitzvahs? You look at which mitzvah can push off other mitzvahs. So, we have a pasuk that says that a nazir, a person that accepted not to drink wine and not to become defiled, so it says, al kol nafshot met lo yavo. He may not become defiled for anyone. Then the pasuk starts enumerating. His father, mother, brother, sister, he may not get defiled to them. So Chazal say, what's the pasuk doing? You just told me you can't get defiled for anyone. So why does it reiterate? Father, mother, brother, sister, you can't get defiled for any of them. So the Gemara says the following. Okay. Le'aviv, why does the pasuk say a miut? It says he can't get defiled for anyone. He can't get defiled for his father. It's telling you, even his father not, but someone else yes. Who's that someone else yes? A meis mitzvah. If he encounters a corpse and there's no one there who's going to take care of it, so then the importance of treating a human being with dignity, of burying that corpse, overrides, bury him. Okay, that's la'aviv. Limo, why does it say don't get defiled to your mother? That's telling you, let's say he's a Kohen, So he has two prohibitions. He's a kohen and a nazir. And he meets a corpse. It's not he shouldn't get defiled for that corpse, but there's no one else around. Okay, get defiled, bury that corpse, even though it's two levels of holiness. That's why it says, a nazir should not get defiled for his mother. Tell you, mother not. But meis mitzvah, yes. Ah, you told me that from the Aviv. Ah, even if you have another level of holiness, that he's a kohen. Okay, why does it say brother? So that's to tell you, even if he's the Kohen Gadol, he's the high priest, so he's got even a higher level of holiness. Kohen Gadol plus Nazir, he shouldn't get defiled for his brother, but he could get defiled for a meis mitzvah, for a corpse that he finds on the ground. What about Vilachoso? So then the Gemara says, wait a second, but his sister, where are you going to go from here? His sister, now what? You know, it's no bigger than Kohen Gadol and Nazir. What are you going to do now? The Gemara says, that's teaching you another halacha. Let's say he was en route to circumcise his son. Big mitzvah, you get kares if you don't circumcise your son. It's one of two mitzvahs that if a person forgoes, it's, even though it's a mitzvah say, he gets kares. Or let's say he was en route to bring the Korban Pesach. Also, big mitzvah. It's dochetuma, it's the whole Jewish heritage, right? Everything revolves around Pesach. And also, the Chazal tells it's got kares. Okay. So Mila has 13 covenants on it, and it's Kares. Pesach, that's a biggie too, and that's also Kares. If he was en route to one of those, and he encounters the corpse, and if he starts dealing with the corpse, well, at least it'll get buried, because there's no one else within earshot who's going to do it, but he's going to get defiled. He ain't doing that Karban Pesach. Nonetheless, Vilachoso teaches me deal with that. Okay, so we learn here an important concept, that dealing with the meis mitzvah is one of the weightiest mitzvahs we have. Pushes off many, many other mitzvahs. Says the Ramban. Okay. Uvechol ha-mitzvot, and throughout all the mitzvahs, en lanu gdola mikvorat mit mitzvah. He got nothing bigger, and he doesn't mean that literally. I mean, obviously, it's not Yahar Gval Yavar. He means in many respects, there's nothing bigger than burying meis mitzvah, a corpse that has no one there to bury him. Shedachu ba'pesach u'mila afilu b'kohen gadol v'nazir. That Chazal said, deal with the meis mitzvah, even at the cost of Pesach, a circumcision, a kohen gadol, and he's a nazir. And you know what? Mr. Rambam, v'lo ba'torah mikra b'ze klal. There's no verse that says you should deal with the meis mitzvah, right? I just explained to you where we derive it. It's all derivations. Aval pshuto shel mikra oselken. Simple reading of the psukim prohibits it. Dichtiv, it says, al kol nafshot met lo yavo. It says a nazir should not come in contact with any dead body, with any dead person. So then, the simple reading of the pasuk prohibits this, and we say no for a meis mitzvah, nazir, kohen gadol, mila, bris, go do it. Vunidrash, and it's all derivation. Meitur haketuv, because the pasuk seems to have superfluous words. Omro, the pasuk says la'aviv u'le'imo u'deino mitameh. The pasuk stresses don't let a nazir become defiled for his father or mother. Aval mitameh u'lemet mitzvah, but he does become defiled for a meis mitzvah. And so too by a nazir, by a kohen gadol, Chazal derive it from the fact that it says la'aviv u'le'imo by a kohen gadol. By a nazir, it also says la'aviv u'le'imo l'achiv v'l'achoto u'deino mitameh, av mitameh u'lemet mitzvah, ad sherabu kol echad, until they used every ribui, like we discussed earlier. Ve'eviu kohen gadol v'nazir v'olech l'shchot et ha'pesach v'lamul et no, shemtameh l'emet mitzvah. To the point where Chazal encompassed a nazir, kohen gadol, he's going to slaughter the paschal offering and circumcise his son. He could become defiled for a meis mitzvah. Okay? So the Ramban says, I've brought many examples, now let me bring a biggie. Okay, we'll pause here.